calendars.
I got my own.
Everybody, the time now is 6:43. We are out of executive session. We're going to go back to opening item C. This is the approved the minutes of October 17, 2018. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes of October 17?
Move to approve.
Second.
Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? None opposed. Okay, that motion passes. Okay, the next item, since we made no decision in executive session, we'll now work on the board action items. The first one is consideration act on the Dynamic Support Solutions Financial Management Report. Gene and Bill.
So the last paragraph on page one, before the calculations, we changed it. We synced up, made sure we had the right number of schools and sites and all that. So that's the only change from what Lou has sent out earlier.
This should, you should have a copy in your packet. What Bill's referencing is they made a small editorial change from the pack, from the one that you have in your packet. Gene's handing that out.
Thank you. So the report, we laid it out with kind of the objective of why the board acted to engage us to do a report, a little bit on the company background. Then we get right into the calculations. Several things that could have been managed a little differently that might have actually got the school to a over 40 days.
Can you tell them what triggers?
Yes. I'm sorry.
What triggered the need for this management report?
Yeah, the trigger is that the school was going to miss their liquidity covenant, and so we were coming in to say what it is and what things we can do to make that better. So on page two at the top there is kind of a number of items that we could have done that would have gotten us to over 40 days. One of those would have been to actually do a short-term borrowing of $10 million. The school made the decision not to do that because that would have cost, it would have been expensive money because it would have been a short-term and that, so decided not to do that and consequently did not meet the covenant. As the other advisors to the school, we continue to recommend the purchasing of the leased assets is really the way out from a standpoint. And then we do a section where we review what, from our prior report, what actions have been taken and very positive things on most all of those items. In summary, we think that the school has taken the right actions and are on the road to making significant progress. Cash is still a problem, and getting out of the leases is really the solution to that problem. Any questions?
Any questions?
We've got a couple of calculations in there, too, for you to look at it to see how we got through the numbers.
So just to be clear, so there's a statement here that says combined a pro forma calculation of the liquidity requirement yields 44. I'm sorry, page two, right in the middle in bold. It's bold.
That was if we did all of the things, including borrowing the $10 million, we could have got to the 44. The school decided not to do that. Mm-hmm. That was prudent because again, it would have cost several hundred thousand dollars to borrow that on a short term basis. But we did have a lender lined up in that if the decision had been made to do that in June, we could have done that.
Okay.
I think the real demonstration to the investors, hopefully, is that the school had the capability and that to be able to meet the covenant decided not to.
Any other questions from the board? Okay. There being no other questions, thank you, Bill. Okay, can I have a motion to accept the Dynamic Support Solutions Financial Management Report?
So moved.
Okay, a second?
Second.
Okay, a second from Tracy Cox. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? None opposed? Thank you. Okay, so the next item to consider is to consider action on the exercise of purchase options on currently leased properties. Dr. Sett.
This action item is suggested, it may be redundant, but it may be covered also in the next one, but at the advice of our general counsel, he said it might just be nice to have, since it's a real estate, to have the board officially act on authorizing the school to buy out these properties. And so that's what this is here for, is to give you that opportunity. And the next action item, Mr. Sage is going to be presenting to you the mechanism by which that will be taking place, and he'll be asking you basically to make the same kind of deal. So
okay.
I guess this is, we're trying to cover all the bases.
Okay, so board members, take a motion to approve the exercise to purchase the options on the currently leased properties for Isle, Texas.
So moved.
Second.
Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? None opposed. Okay, that approved. Okay, so item C, consider act on the resolution to issue bonds borrowing from Clifton Higher Education Financial Corporation. Tom Sage, sir.
Good evening. I'm actually going to pass out a copy of the resolution. Last time I didn't bring copies for everybody, and I learned my lesson. So,
thanks, Tom.
Pleasure to see y'all this evening. As we discussed earlier this fall when we did the first phase of your purchase of your facilities, that we were coming back with a larger transaction, and this qualifies as larger in every way. The purpose of this transaction is to authorize bonds to be issued to finance the purchase of all of your current lease facilities. I'm happy to go through the resolution a little bit, but I think actually give some more color to what we're talking about. I'd like to ask Drew Masterson to go through his presentation with you to show you the financings. We also have members of his team here, Johnson Church. Your underwriter is with us as well, Rob Nickel, and we're available to answer any questions as we go. Nice. But suffice it to say that the resolution will authorize the transaction that you're going to be presented with to go forward.
Good evening. So your previous action was to authorize the option to purchase these campuses and as well as the Garland student dormitory. The bottom two, Orem and College Station, actually the purchase option is next year. We've set the sizing of the bond issue up to the fees, the lease payments, in other words, to borrowing money to make those lease payments through the purchase date at the end of the summer, so that they're financially taken care of through that date. But the rest of them would all be purchased at closing. This is the summary of the sources and uses of funds. We have basically four different columns there that total up on the right-hand column to a total of roughly $350 million of proceeds, $355 million minus some original issue discount. The taxable series of bonds is going to finance the portion of each lease that was a working capital advance. If you recall the whole history of that, that's in the first number of financings, that's the portion of the lease that was misaccounted in the books, and now it's true capital item, so we're buying that out. That's working capital, so it's not a capital expense, so it has to be financed taxable, not tax exempt. And then there's $600,000 roughly of lease payments in arrears basically the latest lease payment that we're also putting in there. So that's the taxable financing. We essentially will have higher interest rates on that because it's not tax exempt. So we're going to pay it off at the beginning of the amortization period, the first couple of years. The tax exempt column there is the majority of the financing, which is primarily going to the purchase price of the leases, and then the apartments, and then the property tax liabilities. With all of them, the funding of the debt service reserve fund and the cost of issuance. The escrow for the 2019 campuses are the Orem and College Station campuses I mentioned a minute ago. Basically, you're paying $54 million, as you can see down towards the bottom of that column, into purchase of U.S. Treasuries, believe it or not, that will make your lease payments and then your acquisition price at the end of the summer. And the tax-exempt sublien portion of $8.2 million is the amount that the developer is going to take back on a subordinate lien basis to have the same interest rates as the tax-exempt series, but would be subordinate, which basically just helps from a placement standpoint and an optic standpoint to have the developer have some skin in the game, if you will. Those are amortized fully over 10 years. The rest of everything, well, the taxable's over 3 years. The sublien is 10 and everything else is 30. Any questions about any of the sources and uses?
Drew, what's the tax rate going to be on the taxable portion?
The interest rate? On the taxable, what do we assume on the taxable?
We're running it at 6.8 right now. It's a little shorter.
This is Jonathan Church, if we didn't introduce him. He's the one that really does all the work.
You have him back in the rear on the little engine on the treadmill?
All right. Any other questions on this pretty detailed page here?
Any other questions on that?
Really.
Where is it? Okay. Thank you, Drew. Go ahead.
Oh, there's more.
Here's the timeline. Basically, tonight the board would be approving the bond documents, and essentially we'll have a consultant's report that you already approved as well. That's essential to move ahead with the bond financing, and really was what was driving our bond financing towards starting tonight. And then the marketing process effectively starts immediately after your approval, and that'll follow the BB&T to get the bond sold. So we'll print the offering document by the end of the week or early next week, and roughly have a month of marketing period to get any investors down here that need to see things, to probably go see a number of investors and have investor calls and that sort of thing. The pricing would occur December 12th. That's when the rates would be locked. So like if you're buying a house, like an earnest money contract, when everything's set, and then the closing and funding would be December 20th. And then you'll be back to your January board meeting to report back the results. I'll let Jonathan hit a few highlights on the financial projections. But basically, the message is that, as we said in September, that this combination of financings really puts the organization in a solid position financially going forward, based on the projected growth and the schools that you have on the ground now. You can afford these payments and they don't escalate on you. 2.5% every year, no matter what state funding escalates, which it doesn't always escalate 2.5%. So really, I don't think I need to emphasize to to this board how critical this financing is for the long-term health of the organization. On the short term, we're going interest only for this year, which will allow you to build cash and meet your metrics and then some. And Jonathan will walk you through that, but that's sort of the big picture of what all is happening.
Thank you. Just to clarify, go back and look at the note. 6.8 is the all-in TIC on the taxable piece. The actual rate would be set approximately 6% is what we're running at, which would mirror the close, a little closer to the tax exempt. And this is the financial projections. I'm working with Vile, who's really kind of his source data, and we've helped him compile it into a presentable format. With and you can see you've got 2017 audited in there, 2018 audited, which was recently approved, a slightly modified budget 2019 number, and then you've got 5 years. Goodness, we did 5 years of projections in there all the way out through 2024. Really emphasizing just a organic growth of the existing schools is really what this comes down to. We do have a couple of I believe 4 additional buildings coming online throughout this time frame, just to kind of complete the feeder pattern. But you can see the enrollments, you know, steady. You're going from some additional capacity in the schools to really maximizing that capacity. And then we've run the ADA for state revenue at 96% rate. And then the rest of this is just a high level P&L. I don't know how into the weeds y'all really want to get into this, but we've got. We're modeling this, and then we've got this another layer of detail support, but we're trying to model it just to show the increase in revenues. And you can see on the state revenue per ADA line, total revenue per ADA, it's just a kind of a grows gradually with inflation. And then we've got the expenses, with the main story being that with the size and scope of the organization, a lot of those expenses are able to be held in check. So even though enrollment grows, the hope is, and the projections are showing here, that the expenses do not grow at a one-to-one basis, and so allow you to, on the bottom here, this change in net assets allow you to grow your net income on a year-by-year basis, which is seen in the blue section at the bottom of that slide. Any questions on that? Sorry, it's a lot of detail in there.
I got a question. So how is the maybe you've done this under other operating costs. So if, for example, as buildings depreciate, repairs, and that sort of thing, is that where you've added those ongoing maintenance costs in there?
Correct. So, and that's why you'll notice it jumps significantly from 17 to 18. What's happened is with the new early adoption of the accounting leases, that depreciation expense is now on the income statement. Mm-hmm. And so that's exactly what that is. And so it's depreciation increases. There's a few other kind of minor items in there, but the bulk of that is depreciation.
Okay. Any other questions from the board?
We've got some ratios on the next page.
So this is just a continuation of that first slide. And all I'm taking is the EBITDA, the earnings before interest, depreciation, and amortization number. Basically just your cash flows and running all the ratios off that. You can see the EBITDA margin, very tight, 4.3% in 17, which obviously was a compressed year. 18, we've got on there audited number 30.8, and you can see it's just a little bit below that, hopefully to be conservative, but up above the 20% mark, where certainly you'll see these ratios improving over time. We've got the debt service on there, and this is after the leases are taken out starting in 19. And we've got, so again, with the early adoption of the accounting treatment, all of the leases are now on the balance sheet and are included in this debt principal and interest figure. So it's all on here. And then we've got a couple of minor issuances, debt issuances in 21 and 22 to help the new buildings in the existing infrastructure come online. To point you to the bolded items, the debt service coverage covenant is 1.1 times, and you can see there in audited 17 that number, and the DSS call-in was made for that management consultant, but in projected years, a much healthier 1.32 based on the way we were calculating it, a little tighter in 19 as this debt gets refinanced, and then you know, a lot more cushion going forward starting in 2020, as you see the 1.36, 1.30, and kind of being in that high 1.3 range. And then the maximum annual debt service is just the going out, extending the schedule. It's just about $47 million. And again, this is before this issue. With this issue, it's the $40.3 million is right about where we would calculate your maximum annual debt service as of today. And then we've got the coverage. One of the key things with this exercise is that you're in order to issue the debt, you need to be at 1.2 times maximum annual debt service coverage in 2020. So we've got that figure showing right there at 1.23 times. And then days cash on hand, as Bill and Jane just discussed, didn't quite make the covenant of 40 days this year. And this will, with that refinancing, allow you to build it back over the required 45-day threshold. We're calculating as of right now 47.5. So very, very tight, but achievable goal. And then really from there on out, it's again, the story is just that the schools are able to sustain operations and get back to an area where, you know, you're over 100 days. And again, that investment grade rating is hopefully something in the future that is achievable over that 100 days mark. And then you just got the final two on there, just debt service as a percent of operating revenue, also referred to as debt burden. It's and again, 8% is before the that's before the accounting treatment with the leases, and so once those leases come on, you can see it's right about 20% year to year. Debt per student is starting out close $26,000-$27,000 per student, and gradually comes down a little bit. But those numbers, we do want to point out, are on the high side. Certainly, debt service is for an investment grade credit, this would be a little higher than we'd like to see, but. Again, the real story is it's getting it on track for that eventual investment grade rating, hopefully in the out years of these projections.
Any particular reason the debt per student spiked in 21 versus the year before?
Sure. So that's part of the ongoing kind of process of these projections, we've been trying to establish when the timing as far as when these three additional high schools, one additional K-8 would come online, and so those would all come online in that year. They would all be online at that point, and so that's why you see it that number spike then that particular year, and then again starting to come down again. So until then, they're in the assumption is they're in church leases or building leases, and so you're not seeing that debt on the balance sheet as a result.
So days cash on hand increases kind of a function of the increase in student revenue as well as the reduction of the expenses that we didn't have from the leases.
That's correct. And then so it's just and just in 2019, part of the the rationale for the financing at this time, you would have a delayed interest payment get you through the fiscal year, and so that does help bring up that days cash number.
Any questions on the board on that page? Good. Thank you, Drew. Next page.
Sure. This is just a debt service coverage, which we pretty much just covered for the first 5 years of the projections. This just goes on out beyond that point. In terms of the market, basically, the number one thing that we're focused on is the current rise in interest rates over the last 2 months has caused about $4 billion of outflows from the bond funds. Mm-hmm. Not all high yield bond funds, but a good chunk of that is the high yield bond funds, and $1 billion of that in last week. So if there's any cautionary note on the ability to execute the record largest charter school deal plus being non-rated, You don't want to do that in a week where they're liquidating $1 billion worth of bonds and you're trying to sell them, you know, $350 million worth. That's just not going to happen. So we've had the pedal to the metal to get ready for tonight, but, you know, when it comes time to sell on December 12th, if the market's still in the mode that it was last week and possibly this week, we would just wait. And, you know, the main thing is to get this done before your leases escalate. The other incentive to go as fast as possible is to get the interest-only period going this year so that you meet your covenants by the end of the fiscal year, which is June 30. So if we get past February, that starts to get hard to do. And we'll come up with a different plan at that point. But, you know, I don't know, Rob, if you have anything else to add about the market. This is the guy whose firm is actually selling your bonds. You know, we're just your advisors. So.
No, Drew, I appreciate it. Thanks for letting me come. I think you hit the most important highlights. Obviously, we're watching pretty closely the outflows. That affects all the bond funds. Those aren't the only buyers in the market for high yield, but it's a big piece of the buyers for something this size. So, as Drew said, we're just kind of watching the market week to week. But we want to be in a position to run and hit the market running, you know, should things move good. So, we're trying to be ready to move at the earliest possible time. We are having some offline discussions with single investor as well, just as a simultaneous backup. So
you'll go to all the usual suspects like the Leg Masons and...
Right, on a public sale, it'd be get everybody that could possibly want to look at this deal to look at. Mm-hmm. And that'd be the function of the marketing period, which is why it's longer. Mm-hmm. So we can actually go on the road live like y'all did in 15 and city to city, mm-hmm. and see as many investors and touch as many investors face to face as possible.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you. After that, we just had a couple of graphs of interest rates. Basically, rates are, you know, for this financing all in would be about 6.25. So up from where we were. A year ago, but still feasible in the earnings scheme of your overall projections.
So we really don't think the Fed's going to raise anything before the end of the year?
We think they will in December.
Yeah. In December,
I think so.
Yeah. Probably not tomorrow.
Yeah. Mm.
Any questions from the board?
This looks really thorough.
Yeah,
thank you,
good.
Drew. Appreciate the presentation.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. And so the resolution that you're considering this evening authorizes the transaction as described. We do have an amount not to exceed $400 million. It's quite a bit north of what we would probably end up issuing. There have been a number of vagaries in the transaction as far as pricing and premium and things like that. We're not planning to issue a nickel more than we need to, but that's what the resolution anticipates. So it gives us some room to move things around, and we are working today on that timetable. But this is the only action that the board will need to take. This authorizes the team, your administration of ILT, me, the underwriters, your FA, to move forward with this transaction to pursue it successfully. And close it through the Attorney General's office. As Drew indicated, we have 180 days to effectuate this transaction under this resolution. If the market moves away from us or we need to do something different, we'll come back and talk to you. And we'll see if there's something different we need to do. We're very excited about this transaction. It's gonna really do wonderful things for the school, but I think we're all going into it with our eyes wide open. That we have a very, very large transaction hitting the market at a challenging time. And so we're gonna be ready to deal with it.
Great. Any other questions for Tom? Okay, I'll take a motion to accept the resolution to issue bonds borrowing from Clifton Higher Education Financial Corporation.
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? None opposed? Thank you. Thank you, Tom.
However you want to do this, we can say after.
Guys, we'll start signing while we finish the rest of the meeting.
Yeah, well, Tracy, you can start since you're the first signer.
Yeah, I'll just get up there with them, tell them where to start.
All right, so the next item on the agenda is consider an act on the investment pool with Logic. Ronald?
Yes, the next couple of items are just some information that I want to present to the board and consider as far as investment pools. I know Edwin's probably heard these terms before in regards to Texaco and Logic. This gives us another option beside the depository to invest these funds, because currently what we have at the depository is nowhere near the earnings that we would see at Texaco and or Logic. So these are investment pools, Logic being backed by TASB, Texaco by the state of Texas from that standpoint. I've been using Texaco probably for 20 plus years from that standpoint. And originally it was the only one that schools could be a part of. You know, since then Logic and Lone Star and them have been developed from that standpoint. But these are the two, with your permission, with this first one being the Lone Star, I believe, that we're talking about now.
Logic's the first one.
Logic. Logic.
We need two separate actions,
right,
for each one of them. So
it'll be a resolution that'll be need to be adopted by the board and approved. Any questions or comments in regards to you on this investment pool?
And this agreement's for how long?
It just continues to renew.
It's a renewal.
So it's a renewal. It's annually.
Yes, sir. Okay. Yes, sir.
Any questions on that? Okay, I'll accept a motion to accept the agreement to invest with Logic, the investment, or create the investment pool with Logic.
So moved.
Second.
Second. Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
None opposed? Okay. The next one is consider act on the investment pool with Texpool.
Again, this one is here. This is what they all were all based off of, because Texpool was the first.
Was the driver. Okay.
It's been around the longest, several billion dollars in its portfolio from that standpoint. A very strong investment pool, very the access and ease of in and out as far as wire transfers is a whole lot smoother and easier today than it was 20 years ago from that standpoint, and trying to get those taken care of. So. Any questions or comments?
Okay, so I'll accept a motion to act on the investment pool with Texpool.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. None opposed? Okay, so the next one, Ronald, is your consider an act on your September 2018 financial report.
Which one's which?
I think Angela has the latest one. The four that shows the.
Mine says audited versus
total assets and liabilities is 400 plus million. So this was the original one we presented. This is the revised.
Okay, what Angela's handing out to you guys now is the revised. This is what we're going to ask you to approve, but I want Ronald to explain it. Okay, this one is what we did, what you approved last month. So you write that on there somewhere.
I might have put revised on this one.
This is the old one.
Revised. Yeah, Tracy, this is your stuff, man.
The original, that was the one you approved last.
I'll just call that the October.
Thank you.
Oh, September financials.
Right, but I mean, we approved it in October.
Okay.
So the one that was approved last month, just so we get our bearing straight, there is a September 30th. You'll see total assets and total liabilities, or the total assets is $123 million, just over that. Those are the ones that were presented there in October. The revised September one that you have before you now show your total assets of the $422.1 million. The big difference between these two documents, obviously, is now we have incorporated into this the audited financial statements. In the first column, now the June 30th is turning to from unaudited June 30th ending to audited June 30th. So the first column now references the audit and ties to the audit. And the biggest change that you'll see now with the revised September 30th statements is, you know, as Jonathan and him have touched on a little bit already, is the early adoption of the auditors, what the auditors call with our leases with the buildings. They call it a right of use asset. So now those are being placed on the balance sheet. And if you notice now, in particular, we were setting in buildings, you know, around $79.4 million, and you'll see on the revised one for now up over $361.6 million. So wanted to bring back to you, like I said, when we presented these in October, we presented the audited financial statement at the same time. So it's kind of hard to present those, and you hadn't even approved the audit. So I wanted to be able to come back to you with this revised balance sheet and P&L behind it that actually reflect, you know, one, it's the audited numbers as of June 30th, and then what does that look like in affecting those statements from July through September. We're still currently working with our auditors on making sure that some of their entries that they want made, that those are reflected accurately from that standpoint, and how we treat those moving forward based off of this proposed bond offering deal that we have here before the board that y'all approved this evening. So we'll still have some information and clarification from our auditors from that standpoint. So I'm gonna stop, take a deep breath. I know you've got a million things just got thrown at you, and you're trying to sign papers at the same time, so.
Hey, you don't think we can multitask?
Yes, sir, you can.
Okay.
No doubt about it. But I don't want to just have you drink from the fire hydrant either. Any questions, comments, or anything in regards to the...
Any questions from the board?
Well, obviously the big change is the building.
Right. Yes, yeah. Your buildings and your...
Screams at you.
And your... and the land, yeah. You'll see that and it lands in there.
The other liabilities, $4.5 million.
Right, and I purposely kept that set aside so that we don't lose track of it. Not that we would, but I wanted to make sure that, because inevitably with this bond deal we say that we'll go through, that item will come off the balance sheet as part of the closing out of this in there. And when we go back against those assets, that $650,000 that makes up that $4.5 million that will be netted out against the assets. And then also it's reflected in here, as we noted last time, you know, we had just over around $2.5 million or so, $2.6 million of those one-time payments that we had in September that we make that covers
the contracts and all that.
Your renewal software agreements, we have some contracts, you know, Adobe license, Microsoft license, Lightspeed, I mean, all those that you pay one time. And several of our leases with Dell, and the way they structure them, they're annual payments. Our 3-year leases, but there's 3 1-year payments that we make. And so we saw a lot of that in September also.
Any questions on the board? So you've accounted for everything now.
Yes, sir. Best we know it today, yes, sir.
From the unaudited P&L to the new one?
Yes. It was a break even?
I don't know which time that, but that's okay.
Go ahead. No, what's your question?
No, I just glanced at the unrestricted asset line, and it went from 11.8 to 11.4. I'm just going to give us 400,000 swing. What was that?
The difference there, the 11, are you talking about the unrestricted?
Unrestricted net assets, yeah.
On the 11.4, because we had made, I don't know if you remember this, but during the year, we had made an equity transfer out of the fund, I call it fund balance, but out of equity, where we had our student activity fund count setting.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
we changed that. So that 429,000, we moved out of equity to get into those liability accounts, which now you'll see it on the asset, on the balance sheet for those student accounts.
And it was buried in the 11.8 before?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You should always leave it there, I think. Let me leave it where you got it now.
Yes, sir. You were correct.
That makes sense.
And like I said, I want to make sure Tracy had a hard copy of the audit, because he wasn't here last time, so I gave one to him, because I know he'd want to keep it from that standpoint, so.
I'm going to read it later, I trust.
Because, you know, Gene and Bill, when they presented their financial management, you know, a lot of that stuff was based off of the audit and stuff in there, so making sure all of this ties. Jonathan's got, obviously, his model is based off of that. He's got 2 years of audited financial information there now that y'all approved the 2018 last time.
Okay. Any questions from the board? Okay. So what we need is I'll take a motion to accept the adjusted September 2018 financial report.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. So now we're up to the reports. CAICO report, Dr. Carrasco.
May I say just one thing before I leave?
Oh, sure.
I just rest assurance with the Board of Trustees in working my 26th year. What you have behind me here is one of the most outstanding, and with Tom, exceptional financial teams I've ever been a part of. You know, working on the public school side, you know, we didn't do this, going through the public sales like this. You know, it was always PSF guaranteed, and so
easy.
You know, it was much, much different than this. And so I know they come up here and they make this look really, really smooth and sweet and simple, but there's a tremendous amount of time and effort that's put in by these gentlemen here and the young ladies and other gentlemen that fall behind them. But rest assured, you need to know that these men, and that we have women here also that represent the district very, very well, have the best interest of you, the staff, and the students. And, you know, it's been a privilege and an honor for me to work with them and continue to work with them and look forward to these next 2 to 4 weeks. But, you know, they're an outstanding group of young men and younger men, and I'll leave it at that. That's the point. But I just wanted you to know, they're, like I said, it's an outstanding group. And so
I hope you didn't put any geritol or any of that stuff in there.
Yes, sir.
So. Okay. Thank you, Ronald. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You. Thanks.
Okay, Dr. Carrasco.
As Dr. Carrasco comes up and joins us, first of all, concur with Ronald on our team, but also Ronald's a part of that team. So he's a big piece of that puzzle as well. So I'd like to compliment him as well.
Well, I was going to say, was he going to make a recommendation for a change in MBA public finance accounting?
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. And then I have to tell you that I erred when I gave Finn the title for part of Dr. Carrasco's report. She will correct that. But I just wanted you to know that was not her error. That was my error.
Thank you.
It's all
Good
yours.
Evening. So you have a copy of my report, and it's three separate documents. The first one is the actual report, which provides a summary of some of the, so we're shifting the conversation a little bit away from finances and more on curriculum and instruction. The first item is I give you guys an overview of some of the professional development highlights that we've had since last we met, which include professional development on literacy stations and engagement strategies, focused on our English learners, funded out of Title III. We've attended a couple of conferences, the CAST conference, which is a conference for the advancement of science teaching. We actually sent close to 50 team members to this conference. It was held here locally, or well, in Fort Worth. The Advanced Placement Conference, as well as the TCSA in Houston last week. Also wanted to share that this past Monday, we held our end of second cycle data day, and you have a copy of the agenda, or the agenda framework, in your, as part of your board packet. But our all of our teachers and principals, assistant principals, coaches, they spent the morning in professional development, and it was very campus specific. Then the afternoon was on data analysis, and it's taking the first two cycles of data that we've gathered so far and having a reflection on how we're growing students, gaps that may exist, and an action plan for this current third cycle. Monday, while we were hosting our data day, we also hosted the DFW Fine Arts competition. It was during the day, since the kids didn't have school on Monday, at Keller Saginaw High School, and then here for DFW, then this coming Saturday, we're going to host the Fine Arts competition for our Houston campuses. The winners of those two competitions, the top three, will advance to the first annual statewide competition that we're going to be hosting in the spring. But we had over 2,000 individual student entries, so we're excited that we've been able to give our students this opportunity. Shifting gears, actually, so I'll save this presentation for the end, but just a couple other areas that I highlighted. One is we held this past month, we had a visit from our from the College Board. We have 35 teachers that are College Board / Hanban teachers. So College Board comes every year and visits with the teachers and observes classrooms. But this is one of our best visits yet. Bless you. Lastly, before we shift to this program evaluation, is wanted to share that a highlight from our math and reading language arts departments is they've been able to get teams together to develop formative assessments for our teachers. So for all of our STAR tested courses, third grade through high school, they provided, in some cases, their daily formative assessments or weekly, and even interim mid-cycle assessments as well. They're optional, but nonetheless a good resource for our teachers who wanted a little bit more. So, shifting gears now to the dual language ESL program evaluation. This is part of a program, an annual program evaluation that we present to y'all. And this is a program evaluation of how of our program for our English learners. Okay, so these are students whose home language is other than English, who have not yet mastered the English language as identified by the state criteria. I'm going to go ahead and jump to slides. Of course, our mission. Again, the summary of why we are sharing this program evaluation with you, and essentially to update you on the academic progress of our English learners. And so, in sum, we have two main programs of service for our English learners. At the elementary level, we have the two-way dual language program, in which students are learning English while also picking up the Spanish language and, of course, Chinese at IELTS Texas. Our dual language program is not just for our English learners, but also it is our program of service for 100% of our kids. We also, as identified by the state, we have an ESL. They're calling it a pull-out program. We don't actually pull students out of the classroom, but it is a program in which students whose native language is neither English nor Spanish. The program of service for them is English as a second language. And especially at the secondary levels and at the high school level, it's content-based ESL, meaning they're picking up the content while also the teacher scaffolds some of their learning through different strategies that help linguistically simplify some of the content to make that content accessible to them without watering down the curriculum. So see how many students we're talking about, we have, and this program evaluation, by the way, this is last year's data. So the 17-18 data, so this program evaluation is specific to the 4,233 kids, so 26% of our students last year. As you can see, this year that number has grown to 4,858 students, but the percentage of the students has remained relatively the same, 26.1 versus the 26.19 that we had last year. As far as how they are doing academically, I want to go ahead and highlight the last column. The way this is set up is you've got the grade level. So third, you can see it's third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, the middle school, sixth, seventh, eighth, and then ninth and tenth grade, because these are where we're assessing kids in reading and in math. What the last column does is provide the district versus the state comparison. So this puts it in perspective. Not just how our kids are doing, but how are they doing in comparison or relative to the rest of the English learners statewide. Of the 20 different assessments in which we have data on, a celebration is that even though there is an achievement gap between how well our English language learners are doing in comparison to our native English speakers, in comparison to the state, in 15 of the 20 categories, the kids are doing are faring above the state average.
Can you walk me through just one line?
Sure
so
thing.
I understand.
Okay, so let's say, for example, eighth grade.
Eighth grade reading.
Use the one.
Use the previous slide. Because see, it has a heading.
Okay, there we go.
Okay.
So third grade.
Let's look
at the very, very first row.
Yeah, third grade reading.
So third grade, you can see how those are the different assessments. We've got reading, English, Spanish, and then math, English, and Spanish. The first half, so it's shaded in a yellowish color. Those are a district scores. The blue are state scores. And then the very last column is a comparison of district Isle Texas versus state.
So like just the first line,
very
reading,
first one,
reading
correct.
English.
We have 1,569 kids that took the test in third grade.
502 are ELS.
You got it.
69 pass. 66 of the ELS pass. So this difference.
That's the achievement
just
gap.
The two of
three,
those.
3%.
That's between all our kids and the English language learners.
Okay, yeah.
Minus three, so it's 69 minus 66.
And then the blue, compare that.
The blue is the state.
As the state. So you could see that the state achievement gap is a 9-point gap.
Right. Okay, that's what I'm trying to get my head around this. So
correct.
Yeah, so we were lower than the state.
That we were better.
Passing 69 versus they passed 76.
Correct.
Like that. Yeah, just...
And then
so on that particular
this column
one.
Is correct. Actually, this last column actually is dealing with the gap there.
Is the
it's
gap.
Not dealing with how we did in comparison to the state. It's dealing with how our gap relates to the state's gap.
So
positive
is a
bad, positive is not good, and negative is good.
No, positive is
positive
good.
Positive is good.
Right. You don't want to, you want to be closer. So English language learners, African American students, are always below the state. And so the question is, are you you know, what's the delta between the state and English language learners, and are you above that plus, or are you below that?
Oh, I see. So our minus three is better than their minus nine.
Right.
That's right. I hadn't got my head around this. I'm sorry.
So we're
just got to stop.
So we're plus.
Dumb it down for me.
It's a lot going on.
So we're plus six.
Good news.
Got it.
Which
our gap is plus six.
Yeah.
Which is reflected in the far right hand corner, the plus six.
Yes.
And the plus five.
Now,
not so good on the fourth.
Mm-hmm. We are. You can see the third, fourth, and fifth, and this is where our scores are the lowest, and where we are targeting, especially this year, in the area of growth, student growth, is this is where we've got the largest gaps. At the secondary level, you can see that in some cases we have double digit.
Any particular reason?
Couple of reasons. One, you can look at what the research says on two-way dual language programs. And what the research says is that kids, you don't see the impact as much in third, fourth, and fifth grade, but it's when the kids get to the secondary level that what research shows is that the kids, not only is the gap closed, but the kids who have been participating in a two-way dual language program, they outperform their peers. But you usually don't see that happening until the secondary levels, where you know we've been.
Is that a maturity thing, or is that a?
It's a brain synapses piece. The dual language, the earlier that they're trying to do their state exam plus learn another language, there's more of a struggle there. But the brain is being rewired, and then it takes off upper middle school and high school.
So there's brain research behind it. Now, one of my favorite research is Thomas and Collier study, and they've now looked at over 8 million students that they've tracked in two-way dual language programs across the state. But they see similar trends, where the difference isn't the impact isn't as great at third through fifth, but it's really at the middle school and high school level, where the kids not only catch up, but they outperform their peers. Also, in third through fifth, this is where we have a lot of our least experienced teachers, a little bit higher student-teacher ratio as well, and the reality is that even though the two-way dual language program is incredible, it's wonderful, but it is complicated to implement, and so for newer teachers, it's quite a bit of effort on our part and a lot of work on their part to make sure that they're implementing the program to fidelity so that we can reap the benefits of the program.
Well, I got a question. I heard a report recently in terms of reading there's a recommendation to go back towards phonetics for reading and language development. Is that something that you guys are looking at?
Our approach to teaching kids to read is the balanced literacy approach. Phonics is a component of that. I know when it comes to teaching kids how to read, there's the phonics camp and the whole language camp. We're somewhere in the middle. We believe that, yes, there's value in teaching phonics and teaching them the letter sound recognition and the drills involved in teaching the phonics approach. But also, it's very important that not only are they learning the phonics, but also, most importantly, it's the comprehension. Is knowing that the letters don't just make a sound, have a sound, but there's a meaning. There's always a message behind the literature, the stories, the sentences, and that stretches to the language arts and writing as well.
Great, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The last few slides, this one summarizes the TELPASS. The TELPASS is a state test given to our kids to see how they are progressing in their acquisition of the English language. This year, there was no yearly progress established, in part because this past year was the first year that the state they made a shift in their assessment, and they have an online assessment that they rolled out for the first time last year. There were some glitches with the assessment, and certainly also with the scoring of the online assessment. So this year there was no yearly progress established. However, what we have here is the composite rating. So you can see, as an example, in kindergarten of the 454 kids, about 19.27 scored at the beginner level, 41 intermediate, then the advanced, and finally the advanced high.
So, quick question. So the advanced high, does the advanced high have any kind of correlation with college readiness, or is this just, there's just no way to tell?
No,
just language acquisition,
right.
So.
No.
It is, I think there probably is a correlation, especially in the lower grades, because the kids that are already scoring advanced high, even though English is not their native language, it's likely that if the trend continues, they're going to continue to do real well on state assessments, standardized norm reference tests, but that will include SAT and college readiness exams. But this really doesn't have any academic. It's an assessment of academics, but it is more so on just the input and output, the listening, speaking, reading, and writing.
Got it.
Okay. And last but not least, we've got the areas that we've identified as being our high priority areas. And those are the writing, fourth grade writing, fifth grade science, seventh grade writing, and eighth grade social studies. And this is looking specifically at our English learner subgroup. So our ELL department is working in collaboration with our reading language arts department, science department, and social studies departments in ensuring that we not only have a plan, but it's of course the implementation of that plan and ensuring that we close the gaps in these areas in particular. A lot of the professional development that we've rolled out this year has been specifically targeting these areas. One I mentioned in my board report earlier, which is in partnership with the Seidlitz publishers. They provided a writing professional development specific to ELs, and then we have one coming up specifically targeting social studies or helping our English learners in social studies classrooms. This slide summarizes the exceptions and waivers that we've submitted to the state. Was due November 1st, so we just submitted it this past week, and it's the, wrong slide.
There you go.
Thank you. It's the number for all of the teachers who are serving in a dual language Spanish classroom or as dual language Spanish teachers that are not yet bilingual certified. 202 for 18-19 and 31 ESL waivers for our secondary English teachers.
We talked about this before, but is this mainly because the teachers that you have, we couldn't hire the ones that were bilingual certified, or you just, there's just not a pool big enough to
this
hire
statewide? I don't have the exact numbers, but I know it's the grand majority of school districts across Texas submit waivers and exceptions. There is a bilingual teacher shortage in the state, actually in the nation. It's very because there is a shortage. And not only is there a shortage, but it is difficult for a Spanish dual language teacher who's not yet certified to earn their certification. The state does not make it easy. They need to take three different exams to earn their certification. A lot of these teachers, in most of our teachers' case, they either don't yet have a pathway to be able to earn their teacher certification, We're working with them on that, and in some cases, it is because it's a language barrier. Their native language isn't English, so even though they know the content real well, they struggle with passing the exam. It is a difficult exam to pass.
And it's not just difficult for the native Spanish speaker to pass the English portion of it. It's difficult for the native English speaker to pass the Spanish portion of it. And neither one of those, is there a good correlation between how successful those teachers are in the classroom and helping the kids to be able to pass the state test?
So that begs to ask, is there something wrong with the test?
Yes, sir.
The whole bilingual law
program,
even at the federal level. Yes, okay. There's something wrong with the law.
Sounds like teachers need to go out and do a little campaigning.
Yes. Here we've got our recruitment activities for the 18-19, as provided by our, in collaboration with our HR department, targeting and or how we will recruit more bilingual teachers. And then we have a summary of the evidence of participation in developing and reviewing our improvement plans, and this is through our DIP, specific performance objective identified in the DIP. And then the last tables provides a summary of our professional development plan for 18-19. Not limited to these, but these are some of the broader, more impactful PD. Sheltered instruction, LPAC, sidelets that I mentioned previously, Debbie Diller, which we held this past month of October, and then La Cosecha, which is coming up in back next week. Okay, any questions?
Thank you, Dr. Carrasco, unless the board has any questions for you. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dr. Say, I guess you're the last one on the agenda.
Mr. Conner has one more.
Okay. Oh, yes. CEO and the superintendent. Okay.
I wanted to talk to you about the Texas Charter School Conference that was held a couple weeks ago that went very, very well. We had four principals who were presenting. A lot of great review from the other attendees there. But also while I was there, Senator Taylor was on a panel. And one of the things that was interesting out of that panel was that he was talking about the interim finance committee that they had for the legislature. And they said that there's actually quite a bit of things that they could agree on about changing the school finance structure moving forward. And the one that was interesting to me is he talked about all the research about the dual language program. And they were seeing so much great results out of that for the English student that they think they have agreement in increasing the funding for the schools or the systems that are doing dual language. Of course, for us, that's all of our kids are in that. So that may be something that is a very, very positive moving forward. And then, of course, I did get an opportunity through Frank Court of being able to spend about 30 minutes with the senator separately so that the senator can hear some of our charter specific challenges that we have with some cities and municipalities, and that was very, very beneficial. Also, being on the TCSA board, we continued that conversation there, and there's quite a bit of activity that they're gearing up for this next legislative session. Lost a couple members in the House for the state legislature, but we picked up some seats in the Senate. So the Senate in the Texas legislature is even stronger, which ironically kind of mirrors what happens on a national level. Why that's important is charters are so dependent on the will of the legislature. And the Senate is very, very strong in its support of charters as part of the public school system. Also, while we were there, I went to Austin to meet further with Senator Taylor's staff, also the Lieutenant Governor's staff, and the Governor's staff. We're trying to put together a small delegation that sometime in the future that could go with us to China. We were hoping to be able to do something by this end of November, December timeframe, and it's not going to happen. So that trip that we were talking about taking place is looking like probably June or July as a possibility. I'm also on the Accountability and Performance Advisory Committee, APAC, and we met this week. One of the things that was very interesting to me was this website that they shared, texasschools.org. You pull it up on your phone, but on that app, you type in any school district or type in any charter, and it will pull up your revenue per kid, and it will pull up your expenses per kid. And when someone challenges us on what we're receiving or what we're spending per kid, in some cases it's a $6,000 delta between Houston ISD and IL Texas. $6,000 delta. That is a lot of money.
Per student.
That this separate but equal system is not supporting us. Assistant principal training, because I did not, I was on sabbatical this summer, have not had an opportunity to spend as much time with the APs, but over four different dates, I'm spending time with those grade level specific APs, and it's been very, very productive. Part of it was very, very encouraging because one of the things we do is ask them to share out where they're from, what's their background, why do they choose IL Texas, and what's been rewarding. And it's pretty amazing some of the people that we've captured just by those mailers that we have sent out, that they receive them in the mail. The third time they get it, they start looking at it, then they start interest. They think it's a private school, and then they get their kids in it, and then they show up to the school, they hear more about it, and then they start looking for positions and jobs to be in the schools. But that has been very, very encouraging. Additionally, yesterday we had the principals meeting and training. We have been having them come up from Houston. Yesterday we tried it where it was split. They did it by Zoom, but we'll be moving more towards having a principals meeting here, and then the next day having a principals meeting down there, try to cut down on some of the travel that they're having to do. Tomorrow, we're also having aspiring administrators training. These are for the teachers who would like to become a grade level administrator, those grade level administrators that would like to become an assistant principal, those assistant principals that would like to become principals, trying to create a core grow our own leaders. We do that in Buffalo. Beautiful little town of Buffalo, because it's halfway between Houston and here, but we max out all the hotels just to try to have a room,
Buffalo
conference room to do it. Campus visits are going well. I'm always excited when I can go on the campus. It still motivates me to see the kids counting off in Chinese. It motivates me to go into the lower grades and to see the kids speaking Chinese. And then my granddaughter, who's a kindergartner, just how fast they're picking these languages up is amazing. Global Education Summit is December the 3rd and the 5th. I intend to go to be a speaker there in Beijing, and so I will be gone for a couple of days there. The last thing that I wanted to mention is to thank Curtis Donaldson for his service in the military, and General, your service in the Marine Corps.
And yours as well.
And thank you, sir. One of the things that we do at IL Texas is we use Veterans Day as a big part of the curriculum, inviting the families, the grandparents, and we make it a big deal. As you may recall, a year ago, a grandparent had went down to KDISD, and I'm not KDISD, but KDK8, participated in that, was just blown away by that ceremony, went home to Waco and wrote a large article that was in the Waco Tribune. And it's just part of that learning opportunity for the kids to understand others before self, servant leadership. And I welcome you this Friday and next Monday, anyone that would like to go out to see and be a part of some of those ceremonies. We put the kids and those veterans up front, not me and not necessarily some of the internal veterans, but it's a pretty good educational opportunity. And that's all I have this time.
Thank you, Eddie. Appreciate it. Alan?
You got my report there on your board agenda packet. You can look at that. Really the big thing that a couple of big things, item five. So we were granted the property tax exemption on those Harris County properties. You can see those there. That tax liability is $1.3 million. And then we're going to be filing suit. We've instructed our attorneys to file suit against Tarrant County, and you can see that tax liability there. So you can read the rest of it. There's no reason for me to read that to you. It's enrollment report, which we always give, HR report, and then our annual fund campaign. Encourage you to hit that link and get your credit card out. I'm done.
Great. Well, thank you, Alan. Okay. Anything else from the board members? Okay, so the time now is exactly 8 o'clock.
Curtis.
Oh.
Would you like to say anything before we
adjourn? Jeez, I'm giving you an out.
No, we were gonna adjourn before you got a chance to say anything.
So
that was
the plan. I'm gonna step down, as you know. I think I've told you, and so I've enjoyed serving on the board for. Since the inception, I've got a chance to see Dr. Edwin Flores come and go, and come again.
Come again.
He does that a lot.
Yeah. I've enjoyed working with you, sir,
through
the years. I talked to a dear friend of mine into joining the board at a critical time. I appreciate his service in helping us through that. And as he said, you talked me into coming, now you're leaving. That's just the way it works. So, you know, what can I say?
Well, we're going to miss you, and we appreciate your service, and both as a member and the board president for a while, and back to a member, and now ex officio.
Yeah, you kept everybody kept talking me into staying. Oh, you have to stay 6 more months. No, you have to stay 6 more months. So.
Well, we appreciate your service, and we know you'll still be out there with Global, and of course, you'll be traveling the world as you always do. So. But we'll look forward to seeing you.
Yeah.
Oh, do we have
have a picture that trying desperately to get up on the.
Ah. Was this at one of the games?
Oh, that picture. I saw that picture.
Oh, I've got a few I could have donated to this.
Ooh. On top of the academic building, maybe.
Well, while we're doing that, what?
But I've enjoyed.
There it is.
Oh, there it is.
Here it is.
Oh, yeah.
What I wanted to say is to thank you very much, Curtis Donaldson, for being willing before we even had a charter to come on board and to advocate, because if it wasn't for you and some of the folks that you were able to talk to, there would not have been some State Board of Education members who voted the way that they voted. And I'm so thankful that they did for us to be here. The gentleman with the bow tie, the former commissioner, of course, you knew him well before he was Commissioner of Education, back when he was Commissioner of the Railroad, and when you were driving him around in a pickup truck and buying barbecue for him, trying to get him elected. Those relationships don't hurt when you're trying to get a brand new
new charter. That was our grand opening of that first school in Garland. That was even before the first day of class. The commissioner made some comments about all the things that we're going to do for kids, and you were a big part of that happening. And so someday we'll get something as a going away gift, a little better than just a picture on a wall.
Yeah.
But from the bottom of my heart, thank you, thank you, thank you for your service.
Yeah, I've enjoyed serving with you, Eddie, and dating all the way back to our rooming with Eddie in college and following his military career. So it was an easy decision when you said, come help me, to come help you. So I enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Curtis, again for your service. As board president, I'll have the final comment. Just to announce to the board that at some point, Dr. Tay and I will create a board workshop so that we can work on a number of items that need to be worked on. And so we'll find a suitable date for everybody to do that. So anyway, the time now is 8:04. Let's entertain a motion to close the meeting.
Okay.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Meeting is now adjourned. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Man, Curtis didn't even flinch on that when he was like,
before you guys leave, we need signatures on these resolutions for the tech school and for logic.
Okay.
And Tracy, you need to sign two or three places on this thing. That secretary signature, that all valuable secretary signature.
We're really gonna let him put off?
Well, I thought y'all had.
Let me see. Yeah.